Welcome to the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Ostie, and this is a podcast covering all things land speed racing on every level, from vintage small displacement motorcycles to cutting-edge streamliners and everything in between. And today, we're honored to have a very special guest, our good automotive enthusiast friend, Mr. Zach Strach. Zach, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really appreciate you setting this up, and I love the podcast. I mean, this is so cool. I've been able to share your past episodes with friends who really don't understand what Bonneville is, and I think that was your goal in setting this thing up to go. So,
well, I appreciate that, that you listen, and even more so that you like it. And you've been sharing it, and that's been spreading the word. So, you know, the salt flats on their own are kind of hard to understand. And then land speed racing is kind of hard to understand. And when you put it all together, you know, unless you're into it, it's kind of hard to get your mind around it. So that was the goal. And hopefully it's working.
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting. Being a sort of a newbie at this back in 2013, I put a word out there to a lot of friends. I said, hey, we're going to Bonneville. Who wants to come along? And I had everyone talk about, oh, it's on my bucket list. But one guy came with me. And then it graduated up to last year, I had 22.
Right.
Cool. We helped them try to get Salt Fever. And a few of them are returning this year in a few weeks.
So. That's cool. And that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy trip to do. A lot of people, you know, they have vacation time that they're going to spend with their family or whatever. And speed week is speed week. And it's not exactly, you know, easy to get to. It's not like if you're bored at the salt, you can go to Disney World next door. So,
yeah, we had a little bribery thing. Well, first week, you know, I had a travel agent that took care of everything for everybody. They just worked with them.
Wow, that's nice.
Then, so that made it pretty, you know, pretty smooth. Then we have our normal trek to Walmart to buy the canopies and the chairs and the coolers, which I think you took advantage of at Speed Week last year.
I did. That was great.
So, you know, we do all that. And then at the end of the Speed Week, we donate it to somebody because who's going to haul back a tent on an airplane?
For sure.
And then we sort of try to make it, you know, easy. I mean, it's Bonneville is unique and cool, but it's, I don't want to use the word not fan friendly. It is, but just knowing, you know, having somebody that's been there before is somewhat of a guide. And then turning them loose. I mean, it's so free to spectate and see, you know, the folks working on the team. I know in your previous podcast, talking to some of the crew members and crew leaders was, they welcome it. And like, I think you've said, it's like, don't stand around too long. You'll end up getting, you'll be handed a wrench or, taking some oil to the safety clean barrels.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really a different experience. Again, it's kind of intimidating, I think, because it is so historic and there is such high regard and there's the perception of the decorum. You know, you got to be respectful to the salt and the gods of speed, if you will. But at the same time, when you get out there, you realize it's just a bunch of hot rodders like anybody else.
Right.
And Exactly. Everybody loves talking about cars and whatever, but it also fills your eyes with things that you don't see anywhere else. Just the landscape and the salt. And of course, something going by at 300 or 400 miles an hour. It's it's a huge escape. And I think that's part of the attraction.
Absolutely.
So you said your first time out there was 13. How did that go?
It was great. I got to know George Poteet quite well and was tinkering with him with cars and actually getting ready to go into a venture of restoring some cars for him. But so that, you know, that was interesting. And my buddy Hutch was there that year. And so I had a friend who was the expert and then got to meet multiple people since then involved in land speed racing. But it was pretty cool. I mean, we did the unique way, and I've done this every time we went out, is you know, we do the Walmart deal and stop and get the stuff, but then we go to Kendig's place and spend Friday afternoon for a tour, which we've got to know Dave and Will and those guys quite well. And then, you know, make our trek to the Salt Saturday morning there for the, you know, I encourage everybody that goes, just attend the driver's meeting so you can really, and this thing you could, that's something you can't do in NASCAR or anyplace else. You can sit there and listen to all the instruction, all the stuff that's going to happen. So you feel like you're a part of it. That's what's so cool. I mean, it's,
yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like, okay, can I just hop in one of these cars and drive now?
Well, yeah, you get kind of antsy for it. And
right.
I know my first time out there, I was more of a fly on the wall, I think, than anything. And it was kind of interesting because it's, I tend to go to a lot of events where I know people, you know, it's just kind of the nature of what you do. Mm-hmm. And going out to the Salt Flats, I probably knew the least amount of people of any of the events that I go to. The people that I knew there, I knew very well, but there was a whole bunch of, you know, people that were just, you know, a lot of anonymity, which was pretty cool, which I look at as an opportunity to make all kinds of new friends. And that's what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Same with us. I mean, we, you know, the first year didn't realize how international it was and how many come down from, you know, Canada and up from South Africa. I mean, up from, you know, South America, South Africa, you name it, they're there. And you find out it's like car people are car people. Doesn't matter where they're from. The sharing, some of our best friends last year at World Finals was a group that, you know, drove all the way from Canada right after. I mean, as soon as they opened the border, they were there. Mm. They couldn't make Speed Week or World Finals, you know, hey, it worked. And you know, we shared a lot of stories and pitted across from them, and they were just so cool. In fact, the Studebaker that's on the cover, I think, of some of the advertising for this year is that car from World Finals. So it's awesome stuff. So
yeah, that's cool. And the other thing is you alluded to the driver's meetings and the safety factor and how serious that is. Mm-hmm. This is in no way an amateur event when it comes to safety.
Absolutely not.
And that's also kind of interesting to process, because when you really get down to it, it's a car driving in a straight line, you know? Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's, hey, I've been out here, let me drive now. And then it's like, well, not so fast, pal, because we don't mess around when it comes with people's safety. So that is a little off-putting. And that, I think, really starts to filter out the people that have the genuine desire to try this, because they have to absorb and understand, appreciate, and be in full support of all the safety stuff and all the little details before you can go play.
Oh, 100%. I'm so glad that, you know, I've been involved now with the Jezel Land Speed team for a few years and, you know, preparing myself to drive, you know, the Dodge Ram truck. I'm so glad I spent the time there at Speed Week last year, just sort of really being a sponge and understanding everything that goes on. And then the safety side of it, reading the rule book back cover to cover and cover to cover, like Wayne Jezel said, it's like he took forever reading it because you had to read between the lines too. And
for sure.
And I had a great coach in Tom Stewart, who's been a veteran of the SALT, both at El Mirage and Bonneville. And he was my coach. And, you know, he coached me to, it's okay, you got a full garb, helmet, Hans device, everything. And you got to get out of this vehicle in 15 seconds or less. And that sounds like a long time, but whenever you got window nets and arm restraints and a steering wheel to deal with and seat belts, it can close in you. And some folks that have a little bit of claustrophobia, it's tough.
For sure.
You realize that, it's real deal. I have to pretend something's bad happening and I have to be out of this thing in 15 seconds. And then you've got to do it blindfolded for all your controls. I mean, you got to have muscle memory to know where the cutoff ignition switch, the fuel shutoffs, all the pieces and parts with, you know, along with the parachute, and I got blindfolded.
Yeah.
And that got pretty intimidating, so much that the guys were giving me a hard time. It's like, okay, you're going to wear the doors and the seats out by, practicing so much. But, you know, but I wasn't going to go up there and have Kiwi or Lee Kennedy say, it's like, yeah, you can't drive. You're too slow. It's like, well, I just want to drive fast. But no, you got to be prepared to do all those safety things as a driver. And then understand the safety equipment side of things. It's not just you have, there's a certain way you have to have your arm restraints. It's to the point of everybody wants to reach up and be able to pull the window net down, and your arm's not going to touch it. You know, I mean, the restraints, the idea is like if you're, you know, tumbling, they do not want your arm exiting past the door, you know, top of the door frame.
Nope.
So it's all for your safety, but you sit and wonder, it's like, I feel like I'm, you know, just clamped down in this thing. And then when Tom and Wayne and all of them check you over and it feels like they're putting their knee in your chest to tighten your straps now, you realize, you know, hey, it's about to get real. And these guys really care about your safety, just so you're on your own team, but also just the rules and regulations that happen in Bonneville are, I mean, top notch. I've raced in HRA for years, and HRA and several, you know, even some little outlaw tracks, and, you know, it's quite a few more steps at Bonneville than just going down a quarter mile track, even though you might be going 200 mile an hour.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you're doing that, I think the key to being successful on that emergency egress, if you will, is getting a routine down. So you were, when you drove the Jezel truck, which is just an awesome thing in itself, that whole concept, how much time, you know, did you have to sit in that truck and wear those door hinges out, like you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's nice where, you know, they, Wayne and the team, you know, afforded me the time just to sit in there with my eyes closed and go through the routine. Every time we were, you know, if I wasn't, you know, working on something, you know, I was in the truck. And then the other was at Speed Week, I got the honor of being the guy that got towed back from the top end. And understanding, you know, the sound of heim joints and rattles and shakes and all the things that happen in a race vehicle on a rough surface. I mean, the most vehicles, as you know, race vehicles do sound like they're falling apart because there's bushings, there's steel to steel items that rattle a lot, and that can unnerve somebody. So I'd always recommend that. It's like, man, you know, get towed in a race vehicle before you drive it, because it tells you a lot. How, and also gave me the steering ratio, because, you know, you don't want quick steering, you know, at Bonneville. I mean, I think, you know, a few folks in the past, your past guests have talked about letting the trucks or let the vehicle, I was referred to the truck, but sort of float. I used to suggest, that people say, how do you drive it? I said, I sort of suggest where I want it to go. and if it reacts, because if you oversteer, you're going for a ride and looping around.
And
then you got to deal with the wind. You know, you've got a nice little carve out in the mountain there to the left of the track, and the wind comes through there at a little pretty good pace sometimes. And you're not prepared for it. You need to be prepared for it, because it'll move your vehicle, you know, 20, 30 feet to the right.
Quickly.
And you can actually feel that in our ride with Lee Kennedy down the track in his pickup truck. You could actually feel him on the street vehicle going 80. So you can imagine, you know, I mean, we're only doing, you know, 200 plus, and you can imagine what George goes through it, you know, and the Vesco team at 400 plus. Almost 500
for sure. So, that's a totally different world. It's interesting you talk about the sound. My first experience with the inside of a race car being like startling was doing the Richard Petty experience at the Vegas Motor Speedway, and it was the NASCAR thing. And you're right, you know, they strap you in and you got your head supports and all the mechanisms to keep you in place.
Right.
And then, like you're saying, they pull that strap like they're trying to crush you. Mm-hmm. And then, man, is this thing loud. And it was not just engine. The engine's louder than any engine you're used to because there is no sound deadening. It's just right there. And it's reverberating inside this shell. And then all that suspension noise and gear noise and there's heat coming from places you're not used to. And it's like, wow. And until you get used to that, you're thinking, is this thing going to come apart? You're right.
Right. Yeah. You look in the mirror. It's like, what's falling off that's important?
Yeah. You're expecting a big smoke trail.
Right.
I know that earlier this week, speaking of Wayne Jezel, they released that dyno video of the Equal 8 engine on the dyno. Yeah. And oh my gosh, is that one of the sweetest sounding things I've ever heard?
That's going to be so awesome. I mean, I heard it when Larry Morgan had it in the little neon running A-modified at the U.S. Nationals, and it sounded great there, but there's nothing like the extended sound of, you know, 5 miles, you know, being able to hear this thing come, go by you, and finish is going to be terrific. So
yeah, it really is.
I mean, I was so proud that, you know, that of Danny and Wayne that they're able to it's been a long time goal. And then for Jason Line to step up and help with the process and prepare everything for his son, Jack. I mean, it's going to be, I feel like in a few weeks I'm going to be part of history with one of the youngest drivers that's going to get in the 11th person to get in the 200 mile an hour club. We feel pretty confident about that. And to be able to be there for an engine that is not a Ford, not a Chevy, not a Dodge. I mean, it is a Danny Jezel hand-built, you know, designed Equal 8 motor.
Yeah, so it's incredible. A complete clean sheet where all the compromises of production engines were taken out.
100%.
And it's so smooth sounding. It's like finally all the pieces are truly in harmony instead of their individual little compromises. So I think the video I saw, he spun it up to 9,500 or something like that.
Yeah, it was almost 10. I think he said it would go to 10.4, but, you know, Wayne's always conservative, rightly so, on the Bonneville stuff, because it just makes sense. I mean, it works, and you want to be able to back up that record run.
Right.
And that extra 20 or 30 horsepower that you might get by cranking it to 10.7, you're not going to gain that much mile an hour. You know, you're down there pushing against the wind anyway, from the 3 mile to the 5 mile in most vehicles. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more of the aerodynamic and driver skill and hanging on.
So. Yeah, for sure. So far we've talked about just the physical aspect of getting in and out of the race vehicle and the noise and kind of getting pushed around. But you know, what's funny is the whole other side that we haven't even touched on is racing, because racing throws you curveballs at every opportunity it can, you know, as far as the vehicle running right and the right tune and the right traction and all this stuff too. So there's a lot going on to be able to process.
Oh, 100%. I mean, we the team that we have is just great, great group of guys and gals. I mean, they understand. Again, we're all volunteer team, and everyone's got a little bit, you know, thing of expertise. It was funny getting acclimated the first few days last year at Speed Week. The only thing I was permitted to do was cook hot dogs and sweep the tarp. So I had to.
That's important.
That's important. Yeah, it was, and I had to earn my way up, and then show that, hey, this is not just another guy that wants to drive the truck. That, you know, hey, I'm in this thing for the long haul. I want to be part of the team, and I had to sort of interview and gain the trust of these experts, because they check and double check and triple check every single thing on that vehicle, and you see it in the other teams too. And everyone's got almost like a fine oil machine. I mean, they come together once or twice a year, and you know, it's almost like building a house where the guys don't even talk much. They just saw and cut and nail things together. It's the same thing happening there. It's like everyone knows what happens whenever we, you know, routines, and you know, that builds as a driver, man, it makes you feel so comfortable and confident that, you know, things from a safety standpoint don't go wrong. And then the other aspect of the performance, that they're looking at those, you know, things that are important, checking data. And yeah, it's an awesome thing, but it all revolves around the team that Wayne has put together is the best. I mean, it's amazing. They amaze me every time I get to spend time with them. So.
It's really remarkable when you put it in that respect that you only come together a couple times a year, but then have to function as a team that, you know, would normally function that way if they practiced every week. Right. I remember talking with Chris Rashke at Poteet's camp when he was, you know, this was probably 4 years ago, and an integral part of that team, and he's been for years. And the concept of bringing somebody else into that environment, and he's like, I don't know. And I totally get it, because everybody's got their function. They know what their capabilities are. You have to trust that they covered everything. You know, it's like in our shop, when we finish a car for a customer, one person does that final check. So there's no opportunity of, well, I thought you did that.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, everyone has a place and a job, and they, you know, do it that excellent. But yeah, and little things, I mean, you know, I have to mention this because Hutch and everybody else is going to be hearing this. You know, it's one of my buddies who works for George Poteet and one of my best friends. And they give me quite a hard time on my run last year, where I guess I'm the closest person to not be in the 200 mile an hour club.
The closest one, huh?
Yeah, I went 199.953 mile an hour.
That is crazy.
You have a digital speedometer in the truck, and everything just went like clockwork. The truck performed outstanding. I mean, it did everything Wayne told me it was going to do. I licensed, and on my third licensing pass, I qualified for a world record. And
wow.
So, you know, everything was spot on, and I get out there and I'm ready. I'm leaving off the bumper of the truck. I think I feel like I'm doing well. The got teams telling me I am, you know, hitting my shift points at 9,200 RPM, and the truck goes out there and just lays at 199 mile an hour from 3.5 miles to 5 miles.
Really?
Yeah. It was sort of like, you know, how to describe it. It sort of felt like I was in not a daze, but just like, why isn't this thing accelerating anymore? And you realize it's all science. I don't know. It's a Dodge truck, you know, which I told some people, it's like pushing a sideways Volkswagen through the air.
For sure.
I mean, it's the most aerodynamic of the trucks out there that run because of the SRT package that, you know, Wayne was able to put on it. Within the rules,
but it still cuts
through the air better than any other truck. But that grind from 3 miles to 5 miles is just, it's a grind. And so I got all the way, I see 199, and I'm strapped in there so tight you can barely breathe. I'm jumping up and down, I'm leaning forward, I'm doing everything I can to make momentum happen. And right at the 5 mile, I mean, it's like you're running, you know, almost 200 mile an hour in my case, and you see the mile markers. I see it coming. And all of a sudden I hit the five and it says 200.43 mile an hour.
Oh, man.
I'm thinking, I made it. And as you're trying to get the truck off the track, you know, the reality sets in. It's like, wait a minute. It is an average between the 4 and the 5. It doesn't mean it's not a drag strip.
Yeah,
time
top speed.
Slip, top speed. And I'm thinking, I'm going to miss this thing so close. And I got up there, and the, you know, naturally the crew, you know, Donnie Lewis and all the guys are there to, you know, to meet me. And Wayne comes up and they've got the time slip already and they're showing it to me. And my exit speed was 200.43 mile an hour. But 199.953. So, you know, we're at that point, you know, we begin to thrash and we're doing, like you said, the mechanical side. It's like, okay, why this little 304 Dodge motor has been over 200 before. and the salt's in excellent condition. You know, is it me? Is it what's going on? So we got, you know, we've got David Lewis and involved in NASCAR. We got all these guys who are experts. We're taking this thing apart. We're taking the carburetor apart. We even at one point to try to get above 199, we took the intercooler off of it. It's not a turbo, but we had an intercooler. We took all of the water and ice out of the cooler tanks, every bit of lead and tungsten out of the bed.
Wow.
They told me not to eat any lunch. We did everything we could do because I wasn't having, the salt was so good. I wasn't spinning the tire.
Sure.
You know, at the lower speeds.
So you didn't need the ballast of the extra weight.
I didn't need the ballast. Yeah. So we were taking every single thing we could off of that truck. It was comical to watch what we were doing. And, it's funny. So we have this giant gaping hole where the intercooler used to be. So now we're trying to fabricate stuff. So I work in the building supply industry, and we have a thing called zip tape, which is the best tape in the world. It'll take your fingerprints off. Mm. And it's used in seam construction on walls. So I brought that roll with me. So we have this whole, you know, really true 199.95 mile an hour tape, mm-hmm. plastered all over the front of this area where the intercooler used to be. And went out there, did everything we could, and that truck, I mean, we didn't have nothing of it. It just said, that's all I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you that. And, you know, and that's it. And, so Wayne and his, you know, the way he thinks, it blows my mind how he knows the rules, knows the records. He comes back and he says, guys, you know, this is, we're winding down to the end of world finals. And Wayne says, you know, it's going to be tough. I mean, you know, now we're in the heat of the day. Is there going to be a miracle that we're going to get 200? Probably not. He said, hey, let's just go set another world record. So we looked at it, and in the fuel class, even though we're running gas, still running gas, we just had to have our fuel checked. The record was only 172 mile an hour in the three mile mark. So I'm running 192 to 95 in the 3 mile. So we just go back out there and set a record and back it up. So, you know, so I'm the closest guy to have a 200 mile an hour hat and be in the club to a guy who has two world records in 6 laps down the track.
Oh, man.
It's like the emotion of all that, you know, and I think, you know, I've had so much fun with it. I mean, I have to wear, apparently I'm being told I have to wear my off red hat. Uh-huh. Not like Chris Ratzke. I can't post it with my red hat.
Right.
But Wayne presented it to me and some of the guys, and Hutch and Daryl Nelson was part of it. But they bought me a hat, or got me a hat that says almost 200 mile an hour club.
That's great.
So needless to say, you'll see me sporting that around Bonneville and having some stories about it, I guess.
For sure, yeah. Well, yeah. That's cool. And definitely a shout out to Hutch, because he's always a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. He'll be there this year selling T-shirts.
Oh, good, good. Well, I'll see him.
Yep.
That's interesting in so many different ways, because yeah. a lot of people are very surprised by how heavy these race vehicles are, and it's because of traction and, you know, just to have some inertia at speed with that crosswind and everything else, you need to have some weight. Do you know what that truck started off as on your first run?
I mean, the standard, you know, stripped down Dodge truck probably weighs 4,600 pounds, and maybe close to 5,000 pounds. The truck in all of its weight added, which is tungsten and lead in 5-6 battery boxes in the bed, with 20 bags of ice in the intercooler tank.
Wow.
And 2 batteries, we pushed close to 7,000 pounds.
Man.
And when I found out, it blew my mind up. And when I tell people that, it's like, oh, no way. And I said, oh, by the way, our contact patch of tire is only about 3 to 4 inches.
Right. You're on these ultra skinny tires.
You're on these small little tires. And then the other thing is everybody says, well, how, you know, where do you get like 2.0 gears at, or, you know, 200-to-1 gears? I says, well, no, I'm running a 380 gear in the truck, and we even put a 430 gear in at one pass. What? You know, they can't believe that you have that tall a gear.
Yeah.
Or that low a gear in those vehicles. And then, well, you got to do the math. I mean, you got 30-inch tall tires, and you have, 10,000 RPM motor.
Right.
So when you put all those pieces together, it equals 10,000 or 9,500 RPM full out running 200 plus mile an hour. At least that's what's in the truck. You know, roadsters and everybody has different combinations.
But right.
The philosophy of, you know, what I thought going out there was lightweight, aerodynamic, and small cubic inch. I knew that. That was an advantage. And, you know, I thought real low gear or real high gear ratios, and totally wrong.
That is, yeah, especially when you see a push truck, because you think that's part of the deal with having that, you know, ultimate highway gear, if you will. Mm-hmm. But that's it's a great, you know, racer philosophy that a lot of street people don't consider. And if you have and when I say street car, you know, if you go out and you buy a Mustang or something, and you just start putting parts on it to make it go faster, right? Mm-hmm. I think it'll be quicker if I put this gear in it, or I'm going to give it a little more power or whatnot. But in this case, a guy like Jezel will plan the exact RPM he wants this thing to be at speed, and then calculate all the gears backwards and tire speed or tire size and everything. Yeah. And the first time I had actually really heard somebody speak of this in depth was a gentleman named Stan Antloser, who was from Michigan, and he raced in the 60s, drag raced. He was known as the pilot of the world's fastest Pontiac Tempest. And he had one of those transaxle Tempests. It was kind of one of the lightweight cars, but with a Pontiac 421 in it. And they would drag race. And he kept saying, you know, there was 300 more RPM in this engine that we needed to capture to run the number on the drag strip. And once you start thinking of it that way, because in some cases you can't do anything more to the engine, you know, that's it's maxed out for its class. So now you got to optimize going the other way.
Oh yeah. It's so neat that, you know, people such as Wayne and the team think outside the box. I mean, you think, you know, preparation is key, and it's a well-prepared team, and, you know, everything is planned in advance, but there's still the ability to sort of shift or change things on the fly. I mean, perfect example was at Speed Week last year, and we were trying to get Steve Watt in the 200 mile an hour club, which is the which is Maxwell Enterprises, which is Speed Demon's crew chief, and we're very involved in that crew. And you know, and Steve has so many jobs out there, but you know, we sort of kidnap him and throw a racing suit on him and threw him in the truck. You know, and we realized, well, say, what can we go for records? Well, we said, I can't remember what it was. It was a B or C motor and a twin turbo motor. Yeah. And why can't we just make this 8-cylinder a 7-cylinder and drop down a class and set another record and still run over 200.
Yeah.
And all this stuff is, Wayne's describing this to me and the team, and they're getting it. And I'm just sitting there like a, you know, not on a log. So it's like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, they check with the tech team and say, hey, you know, is this cool? And they says, hey, as long as you can tell us you're running this cubic inches, we don't care how many cylinders you run on. So Wayne goes out, we pull the rocker out off, and then we take the lifter. It's key weighed, so we turn it up and sideways, so it's still oiling, but it's not touching the cam.
Okay.
We take the spark plug out and take and put a leak down tester with a Scotch-Brite pad zip tied to the end of the leak down tester, so air can get in and out of the cylinder.
Sure, like a filter almost.
Well, like a filter. We short out the spark plug on the frame and fire this thing up, and it sounds pretty mean. And and Steve's just looking at us like, okay, you know, hey, I trust you guys. And we go out there and he clips off a 227, I mean, mid 220 run on 7 cylinders.
That is so cool.
And the thing, I mean, it's flawless and runs great. Then we go back and back it up and, you know, the motor's perfectly fine. You know, who would have thought, you know, of doing those kind of things? And but that's Bonneville. I mean, that's the ingenuity that happens there.
So. Yeah, the rest of us, you know, when you end up with an engine running on 7 cylinders, you're trying to figure out every way possible to make it run on 8 and to think right. backwards and go, okay, well, what can we take off of this that it still needs and is going to mm-hmm. be safe on the engine and keep oil, like you're saying? And that is too cool.
Yeah, it's amazing, the thought process. I tell people that story and they say, oh, no way, you can't do that. It's like, well, we did. Here, you know, here's the record to prove it. So.
I think that's that statement is very valid for a lot of people that say you can't do that. Yeah, well, we did.
Yeah, exactly. Feels pretty good to say that sometimes.
Right. It's unusual. Mm-hmm. So this year, tell me about the plan that Team Jezel's bringing out, because I know it's the new Equal 8 engine.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a totally new motor. You know, that is. That is built and it's purposely designed through what Jason Line is doing right now. Actually, yesterday with it on the dyno at his shop, getting it prepared. Wayne and the team has worked diligently to deal with the exhaust. Nothing fits versus the Dodge motors that we normally run, and that truck has had a little bit of everything. I mean, it had a 500 cubic inch pro stock motor in it, a few years ago when Jason actually raced it.
Mm-hmm.
So, the idea, we're taking two motors that are the Equal 8. We have the 304 that I ran as a backup. So we're going to have three motors with us. And, we're going to go out and basically license Jack. He's got to do the, the up to 150, up to 175. Up to 200, and then get him his A license for over 200, because feel pretty confident that over 200 should be, everything lines up correctly. It should be spot on. But mm-hmm. So, that's the plan to go through and go be there the whole week and set all that up, and then we'll see. There's a very slim chance, but a possible chance we might leave the truck. There, if it works out, and maybe we put the 304. That's what we did last year. We took the twin turbo motor out on the. We were last people off the salt last year. We pulled the twin turbo motor out. That was 376 cubic inch. Put the 304 that I was going to run. Prepared it to go into the truck, or took the motor out and then prepared it for the 304. We went out a few days earlier for the World Finals, and our friend John Hansen's place there in down by the casinos in a little garage, and switched out, put the 304 in, and went out and ran it. So it's quite a bit of flexibility. So there's a lot of cool things that can happen. But yeah, the idea is we've got to get Jack licensed. Which I think will go smooth, and then go all out for a record. And I think Jack, I don't know when he turned 16, but he's going to be one of the youngest guys in at Bonneville with a record and a 200 mile an hour hat. So that's our goal.
That's awesome.
We already have the record with Kristen Stewart, Tom's daughter. She's been one of the youngest ladies that has went out and went over 200 and set a world record. So, like you said, somebody, I think, Seldom Seems Slim, who I love, he's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess you would call him the announcer, but he's all things Bonneville. And, he made the comment that it was called the, Red Hat Taxi.
Yes, right.
That's what the truck is. So, it's this will be Jack will be number 11, so if everything goes well, and then maybe I can be number 12 down the road, we'll see. But The sharing, I think you mentioned that one of the other podcasts, was how much, you know, sharing goes on between the teams, and not only just information, but actually even vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, but we all know it's been about racing in the car world. It's sort of, we're known for that. You know, I mean, people take parts off of their car and give to a competitor, you know, happens all the time.
So. For sure. Mm-hmm. So with Jack being the, we'll call it the primary driver this year.
Yes.
Are mm-hmm. you back to grilling hot dogs and sweeping the tarp, or what you got going on?
I got a promotion.
Oh, right on.
I'll still be cooking hot dogs. I'm taking Scott Balsley, a good friend of mine who's not a rookie. He's been at there three times with us now. And Scott, my friend from Camp Light, I'm going to give him duties of grilling hot dogs and sweeping the tarp. But I got a job. I'm the under guy, so I'm going to do the rear ends, and you know, change things, transmission involvement like that. I you know hope I still have that job. That's what I got last year, and then the benefits is that's the best place for shade, and the salt is nice and cool, and then I'm the guy that gets to wash the under the truck, and. It's pretty awesome. And we pump all the water out of the tank from the intercoolers, and that's what I use to wash the truck.
Oh, nice.
So I get it washed the underneath. So I get a cold shower. It's a little salty.
Yeah.
Last year it was funny. They made fun of me. I didn't realize how much salt I had on my clothes, but I ended up going to the hotel that night, and my jeans actually were so froze, or I guess salty, whatever.
Crispy,
covered.
Yeah.
We crispy. We stood them up in the corner and left them there. And the poor housekeeping people, when they came in, it's like had to have a double take of these black blue jeans standing up against the closet.
For sure.
Because they were just rigid solid with salt.
That's great.
But needless to say, we all work. And one of the funnest things we did last year, but you know, there was a little bit of slowdown at Speed Week. And, you know, we're all down there at the starting line, and you got to wait a little bit. I think that's the best race, best of all racing, is hurry up and wait.
Mm-hmm.
And we're down there, and guys say, it's like, I'm hungry. It's like, well, hey, you know, hot dog man to the rescue. So I go back to the pits, and I get, we have a generator on the truck holding the, keeping the batteries charged. So I grab the hot dog maker and the sodas and all the fixings, and we have a truck bed. So we sat down there and started cooking hot dogs in the staging lanes and made them for competitors all around us. And
that's great.
I was peddling hot dogs at the Salt Flat starting line.
So. You're having a little tailgate party out there.
Exactly. Yeah. Once in a while, it's a tailgate party. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, another side benefit of being the undercar guy is that, you know, if you get your job done, you know, you get to lay down under there, you know, it's,
that's right. Yeah. They don't know if I'm taking a nap or not. They kick my feet every once in a while just to make sure.
Sure. To make sure you're still breathing.
You're out there we're going to show up on Thursday to help with setup. And we're out there till the following Friday. And it's a long process, but man, I wouldn't exchange that vacation for, you know, that for an automotive vacation. It's the best. So.
Well, yeah. And it's a vacation, you know, you use that term lightly because you're going to work harder than you would, you know, anywhere else.
That's true.
So one of the things I like to do is ask people what they would recommend to somebody who wants to head out there maybe for the first time. And we just alluded to the environment's harsh, it's bright, it's sunny. Slim gave us some pointers there. What would you recommend that people don't overlook?
The key is don't be shy. You know, you'll meet people who are very, very friendly, and they can see if you've got a question, but ask the question. You know, naturally, if they're in the middle, if they're an impound, it's pretty hectic for that, you know, 3 hours that you have, but, you know, the time before, if you show up there on Friday, is a good time to show up before any racing starts. So the race setup's pretty much done. So people have more time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be able to sense that, you know, and you'll figure out the teams. But don't just go to the Speed Demon team or the Jezel team or the Aaron Brown team. I mean, go find the guy that's got a 22-foot-long Nash or a Metropolitan, you know, or find the guy. I have more great conversations with guys with 50cc motorcycles.
Oh, yeah. Those are insane.
And the antique Indian. I mean, everybody talks about the world's fastest Indian. I mean, you know, talking to a guy that's racing an Indian there, and, you know, why they do what they do. And they love to talk about it because there is some downtime. And those guys have great, great stories. I mean, so I'd recommend that. And then that's the other thing that seldom seems slim. Seldom, that's a tongue twister.
It sure is.
That Mr. Slim said was, you know, tons of sunblock everything. The sun reflects. Buy your sunglasses there off of the blue blocker guy, because they work. And man, just be prepared to be amazed by the automobile side. I mean, where else are you going to go and see a V8 powered couch? You know, with three guys sitting on it. The ends are recliners, and it's got small block Chevy, and there's actually a pull chain lamp off to the side, and the guys ride it around. I mean, where else are you going to see the Boot Hill Express in real life there? So that the character side and the people watching side of this thing is off the chart. I've used an example of people that are non-car people. I said, picture a very, very toned down Burning Man. You know, because the vehicle side of it and the character side of it is sort of that way, you know.
It's like a Burning Man event of people that can actually do stuff.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I like that.
It's not just, you know, paper mache art. You know, this is the desolation and the weirdness and world records.
Right. 100%. Yeah. And, you know. And then the car shows every night at the Nugget are just over the top. I mean, you will see some amazing engineered vehicles that come to that. And then the next day you'll see them out covered with salt, you know.
So, yeah, that part's a lot of fun. That is a great show. And once again, everybody is more than happy to share stories and hang out.
Oh, yeah.
And there is that whole other side of cars that you're going to see that are just, they're just cool hot rods that people brought out to kind of bring them to the Mecca, you know, to have that experience of having their car at the place where it all began, not necessarily being a competitor, but just to grab that vibe and then they leave the salt on them, you know, as a badge of honor. Whereas the rest of the world, you know, I grew up in the Chicago area. It's like, get one grain of salt on this, I'm going to kill you. But in this case, more the better. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's true. But the people watching is pretty awesome. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's fun that this year Hutch and I have a little wager, and he's selling Speed Demon shirts, and I'm selling the Jezel T-shirts.
Uh-huh.
And he'll hear this probably before we get there. But I let the cat out of the bag. Wayne and I have a plan. The bet is who with the most T-shirts sold with the truck on them and the Speed Demon on it. And Hutch feels for sure he's got it, because Speed Demon is a very popular vehicle, rightly so. It's an amazing team, amazing car. A great driver, good friend. But what's so cool, I don't think he's picked up on this, the event T-shirt front and center has the Jezel truck on it.
Oh yeah.
So the catch is there'll be a lot of those T-shirts sold, maybe more than the Speed Demon.
So this doesn't necessarily have to be by you. This is,
oh, that's exactly everybody. Right. Yeah, Wayne and I have made it very clear we're having fun with that. So that's what this is a lot about. It is just a blast. To go out there and be involved, having the blessed opportunity to be involved in the team, but just being able to go, I mean, it's, you know, everybody should, you know.
That t-shirt contest is another prime example of Wayne reading between the lines of the rule book.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it started with the Yoo-Hoo 2 that I have the chance of driving. I guess that started my driving career, I guess you would call it, with Wayne. I was the main driver for the Yoo-Hoo 2 before it went in the NHRA Museum, the the recreation. And hear the story of how they put a four-speed hydromatic truck transmission in a sedan delivery and dominates junior stock because the rule book said that sedan delivery was a truck. And he could run a four-speed truck when everybody else is running two speeds.
That's it.
So, yeah, I mean, exactly how his mind and Danny's mind think is, we're going to read the book, rule book. We're going to stick with the rules. But, man, we're sure going to read between the lines.
Oh, for sure. So, yeah. A couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to spend a couple hours with Gene Winfield doing an interview for the SEMA Hall of Fame that he's been inducted into this year. Mm-hmm. And he's another one, man. He's been reading between the lines since the 40s. And it's like, it's fun when... Maybe not for everybody else, but I think it'd be fun if you're the guy who caused the rule change.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool.
All right. So your caravan, I mean, how does everybody get out there? You're going out there, you said the Thursday before?
Yeah, Thursday before. We fly into Salt Lake City, and then do the whole track down. We'll have to forego the Kindig visit this year, but because they only have tours on Friday, and they book up quick, so it's best to do that in advance if you're wanting to go to Bonneville, and because it's on the way to go meet Dave and get the tour. It's a great shop. We'll be there Thursday for setup, and right now is only, I think there's five of us that is getting a rental car and heading that way. So.
And the truck is making a heck of a journey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, from Mooresville, North Carolina, Donnie Lewis starts driving, him and his wife, Linda, and they'll start soon. And they go a little early and make a trip of it and be there on the salt waiting on us when we get there. So, and then the rest of the team, we're coming from all over, from all over the area. Bob Hustler, I think, is North Carolina. The Lewises are all from North Carolina. Then, why am I forgetting? Gary Wilson, he's a California guy, and Tom Stewart's California. So they're driving. Mm. And then I come from Virginia. So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
In addition to the great story of hopefully, Jack dipping his toes in the water at hopefully a really great speed. Right. Your other buddies down the way a little bit in the Speed Demon have their sights on a huge number too. It's going to be an exciting year this year.
It is. I mean, George has, we've often left, I've had several conversations with him and a lot of people have too. It's like, when are you going to hang it up? And gosh, he's still having fun. And, that the Speed Demon is such an amazing piece of machinery. I mean, it is just over the top. What Steve and Kenny and Detweiler and all of them have done is just blows your mind when you look at the engineering of every aspect of that car. But 500's there. I mean, the motor, the big block Chevy's dynoed and ready to go. He's got the smaller motor. If he can get the LS to do everything it should do, there's, set another record there. And then haven't heard who might best be in the seat. I mean, we both know one or two guys that might step in there in the future, maybe even a few weeks. So it's sort of like one of those stay tuned. Listen,
sure.
if you're not there, it's like find the website that Seldom Seem Slim does.
Right.
And listen all week, because you're going to hear some amazing stuff if it's just on audio, but I'm hearing there might be some video coverage too is a possibility. So
there is, and I'm actually, helping them out with that a little bit.
Cool.
In the capacity of kind of being a starting line reporter, almost, if you will, because that is such a hard race to cover, being, you know, a 5 mile stretch and then shut down and all the rest. You know, unless you had 50 cameras, you'd never see the whole thing. So I like to refer to it as the world's fastest, slowest thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Yep. So between runs, and as the racers come up to the starting line, we're going to try to chat with them and learn about what's going on, and then hopefully be able to hear the CB announcements from the timing tower of the speeds and the times, and be able to relay that in video, provided we give a signal. And in the past, Tim and some of the guys that were doing it in the past had challenges with the cameras and even cell phones and tablets and pads overheating. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's like working on the moon, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, that'll be an amazing service to the folks that, you know, can't get out there, especially those that just, you know, have been in the past and can't make it, because it's sort of your heart. I mean, if you've been there, I mean, when August, first weekend in August comes about, it's like, you know, you're ready to start driving or hopping on a plane, and not everybody can make that trek. It's, you know,
it was funny when the first time I was out there, it had rained and all the racing got kind of postponed to later in the week. So I didn't even get to see any real racing action. Mm-hmm. And I had to come home, and I'm in my office just glued to Slim and Christensen's reports, which are these sporadic announcements, you know, because they got to wait and everything. And I've got people in my office that, you know, that work in our shop or customers or whatever. And as soon as you hear the squawk box coming through the computer, and my focus goes right to that, and they're like, "What are you listening to?" And I'm like, "No, you don't understand."
Well, at least you've got, you know, you work in the automotive field. I'm sitting in a building supply, listening to that thing, listening to it in my office, and people walk by. It's like, "What in the world are you listening to?"
For sure.
You know, it's like, you know, hey, you don't get it till you get it. So
yes. Yeah. Well, I also hope to maybe record a couple episodes of this podcast out there too, and it'll be fun to hang out in person with a lot of the guests that we've had since we started doing this. So that'll be pretty neat.
I can't wait to see in person Adam Brown's Roadsters.
Oh man, insane.
Those things, the pictures I've seen of those are literally, you know, speed demon type quality. I mean, just amazing. This, I'm looking at the first picture. It's like, where's the suspension? You know, it's like, how do you put it under the hood?
Right.
You know, of a 34, you know, 30, I think it's a 34, you know.
I mean, these are like America's most beautiful roadster contenders that just happen to be insanely fast.
Yeah, 100%. Just like, I mean, the vintage NASCAR vehicles they took out there last year, which is, I mean, and the Bonneville folks that set up the pits, certain areas are just amazing. You know, they're smart. I mean, as soon as you pulled in, you're welcoming vehicles last year at Speed Week were, you know, the
wing
six,
cars, yeah.
The wing car and the Talladega and everything. It's like, this is so awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And a big surprise if you weren't expecting it.
Yeah. Yeah. And not knowing that was a purpose-built Bonneville car, you just thought it was just a repurposed Charger with a nose, you know, with the Daytona nose and wing on it, but it was a total purpose-built car.
So. Yes, because you do have those too. You do have people that will repurpose a car and bring that out. So that's not...
That's what the truck is. I mean, you know, to repeat what I, you know, learning, watch, listen to your podcast, I had no clue that the truck I drove used to deliver engines to Richard Petty Enterprises.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
You know, and your comment about that's the next star of the Cars movie, you know, was spot on perfect. And it's like the little truck that delivered race engines is now going 200 mile an hour on the bottom of the salt flats.
That's it. That was so cool.
I loved it. Yeah.
Children's book in the works.
Exactly.
All right, Zach. Well, listen, I really appreciate you sharing some time and stories with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell me a little bit where people can follow along with your exploits. And you also do some, you know, a lot of coverage with the Automotive Enthusiast Network. I mean, you're kind of everywhere, too.
Yeah. The Auto Enthusiast Network, I do a lot of coverage with Sean Barrington of different events. So, you know, that's where they can catch my content there. If they want to come along for a ride of 199.953 mile an hour, in the Schesel truck, they can look me up on YouTube under Zach Straits, or Z Straits it might be under, but just if you Google Zach Straits, just like George with an S on the end of it, George Strait, and then type in Bonneville, a real cool video a friend of mine did shows up.
And you got, is that the one that you have to watch all the way to the end?
Yeah, you got to watch it all the way to the end. Yeah. It was real quick. I mean, it was so odd that I pulled a parachute, and I'm so anal about getting everything right, and I don't feel the tug because you pull a chute under power. And I didn't feel the tug, and I look in the mirror, and it's like, I see no parachute. So I'm reached up and ratcheting the air chute. I'm pushing the air launcher on the button, the steering wheel. Nothing's happened. And I'm, you know, at this point, you know, rookie driver.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how much do I use these brakes, you know, at 199 mile an hour? And so start coasting. And I'm thinking that something failed. Well, I make the turn, which is a wild thing to do that half a mile exit to the return road. So you'll shut down the next competitor coming behind you. And I get up there. By the time the safety crews are so amazing, they're on top of you. Like if anything happens, it's like, hey, where did you come from? How are you as fast as I was, you know, to be here? And I open the door and there's this dude standing beside me, one of the safety guys. He said, you lose something? And he's holding my parachute. I was like, well, I guess if that's mine, I must have. So I jump out of the truck, walk back, and the whole launcher, the bracketry, the half of the tailgate is bent out and it's gone. So now we're looking for, you know, you got to call in what you dropped on the track because you don't want your competitor or anybody else to run over it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the next car down. So one thing I looked down, it's like, where's the camera? We have a camera mounted on the trailer hitch on the back of the truck, pointing backwards toward, you know, going down the track. And it's gone. I mean, the bracket and everything's gone. And sure enough, you know, they do a sweep of the track and get 80 feet wide in the last 2-3 miles. And they find this replay camera. It's still recording.
Yeah.
So at the end of the clip on YouTube, we just show the camera coming off and tumbling. But the wildest part is, you know, when they find it, it's still recording. The guy picks it up. He's looking at it, and it's recording his beard and nose. Then he puts it in his cup holder, brings a ride all the way back to impound, and then Wayne picks it up, and he's looking at it. So you see Wayne's eyeball. And then we finally realized, hey, that thing's still recording.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So, yep.
And they could see that video of that thing coming off the truck at the end of the run. It's great.
Yeah. Watch all the way to the end. There's a little bonus thing on the YouTube.
That's right.
But, and then I'm on Facebook as Zach Straits, and I do all kinds of fun stuff. In fact, I'll be with you again in November. The week before Thanksgiving at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals, I believe, right?
That's right. Heck yeah. Yeah. Always look forward to that show as well.
Yeah. So I've got a car being unveiled. I hope that you're part of that. So.
Oh, right on.
The little grandma's Jenny the Camaro, Ford guy that races a Dodge and building a Camaro I definitely need some therapy. But
you're not too far off the mark there because – the car as it is today is nowhere near finished. So you're going to be hustling if you're going to unveil it in November.
Every minute. Where paint goes on the inside tomorrow, and then I get it back in 2 weeks. I get back right as I come back from Bonneville, and then I have the blitz to totally assemble a concourse correct 67 SSRS Camaro. So.
Well, it's looking awesome.
Thank you.
I mean, it is looking incredible.
Yeah.
And the work that you do, I think one of the funniest things is when people see the cars that you've done, and you know that Starliner that you worked on for Poteet was one of my all-time favorites, and it's like, wow, what shop did this? And it's I'm a building material salesman, and I built this in my garage, and you're like, no way.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Hats off to you for doing all that.
Thank you.
Great
work.
Appreciate
that. So.
All right. Well, listen, again, we appreciate it and looking forward to seeing you as we record this. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, which would be great. And best of luck to the team. And we'll have to reconvene out there. The Bonneville Up to Speed podcast is produced with the thumbs up of the Southern California Timing Association and is available on all major podcast platforms. Subscribe if you're into this stuff, if you're into land speed racing or just some silly stories. And be sure to visit scta-bni.org for all the latest news and the calendar of SCTA racing events at El Mirage and the Bonneville Salt Flats. Thanks again for tuning in. And for Zach Straits, I'm Kevin Oste, and now you are up to speed.